That's with my colleague, Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. Two wars in Eurasia, attending the Ukrainian war because it's politics now. For example, Britain ramps up naval support for Ukraine to keep Kyiv in the fight. Within these last days, we have news from the EU that there will be consultations going forward for Ukraine to join the EU. They're looking at rebuilding plans. NATO is standing with Ukraine for now. However, over these last days, as Mary well knows, the U.S. Congress has demonstrated its reluctance, its shyness, its obduracy to continue the funding of a war that started a year and a half ago with much surprise of the success of the Ukrainians to resist Russia. But now, Mary, is this the end of the road when the U.S. turns its back?
I hope not, is the answer. I think the European Union, by offering an eventual accession to Ukraine, is potentially saying, look, we'll give this to you if you agree to stop fighting, and we can just get Putin to freeze the conflict and just give him, you know, what he's conquered illegally. Don't worry about it. Someday he'll take it back. And in the meantime, you know, the rest of Ukraine can join the EU sometime in the future. Well, that's putting quite a lot of faith in Brussels. And recall, too, that several nations of the West signed an agreement many years ago to respect Ukraine's sovereignty in exchange for Ukraine giving up nuclear weapons. Well, that didn't go so well. So I don't think Kyiv has any reason to trust the EU, although, of course, publicly, I think they'll welcome the announcement. And as far as the U.S. goes, we're entering a presidential election year where foreign policy and out-of-control federal spending is going to be an issue. And there has always been a tendency, particularly on the right, to say, let's retreat back to our borders, you know, let Europe deal with Ukraine. And while that sounds good, and while I wish that that were the case, what we have learned over previous decades is that without U.S. leadership, Europe doesn't deal with the problem. They need us there. And while I don't like that, and I don't like the federal spending, I think it should be absolutely rolled back, particularly the mandatory spending on our welfare programs. We are the most powerful nation in the world, and we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can deal with our spending. We can provide Ukraine the weapons it needs by making them here at home, benefiting American companies, and we can help them win the war quickly. But we, again, have chosen not to do so. So I think Ukraine's best hope is to just gut this out if and when we until we have a U.S. president that decides to equip them with the tools that they need to win and win quickly, because they can if they're given the right tools. We've just chosen not to do that.
Gideon Rockman is a foreign affairs columnist for the Financial Times, extremely influential. And in these last hours, a column I recommend, Gideon Rockman finds, one, that Ukraine needs to come forward with a credible path to success, and two, to entertain the word armistice, as applying it in terms of the Korea Peninsula of many decades ago. Not an end to a war, not a continuation of the war, but momentarily a ceasefire on the front line. Would that be acceptable to the U.S. and to the Europeans?
Well, the question is whether it's acceptable to the Ukrainians, who are the ones who's have seen so many casualties, who've seen their children taken over the border to Russia, who have seen gross war crimes inflicted upon their women and children. I think that's really the question. It's not about chess pieces on some fictional chessboard. These are real people who are suffering and will never want to become part of Russia ever. And that's the Ukrainian identity and its will to fight, I think, has only been strengthened as they've seen these horrors visited upon their country, much like as in Israel. So whether or not the U.S. and the EU will try to pressure Kyiv to a ceasefire, yeah, I'm sure they will. The U.S. president has shown that if anything, he wants to avoid conflict by appeasement of aggressor states, be it Iran or Russia, even China. He's taken a much more dovish turn. And what I think is ironic about it is that the weaker he behaves, the more aggressive these states become. And so I don't doubt his good wishes or his intent. But unfortunately, I think the policy prescription that he is layering on places like Ukraine is very dangerous, because I think it will only goad Putin to fight on further.
It's an election year in the U.S. means anything's possible. Can you see the Congress changing its mind in the new term?
Well, I think there's still a lot of bipartisan consensus on Capitol Hill to support Ukraine in its fight. But democracies without leadership do tire of foreign conflicts, because ultimately you need the president of the United States as commander in chief to rally the nation behind his foreign policy. And he has started to do that in Ukraine, but he hasn't done it to any significant degree as we have in past conflicts, like, for instance, the Iraq War or you know, one and two or Vietnam or Korea or World War II. There are no stirring, you know, battle cries to support our brave partners in Ukraine or explanations of why it's in the U.S. national interest to help them. So I find the situation, as we've discussed on prior segments, John, to be incredibly dangerous,
right?
Especially in an election year where we don't know what the outcome will be, and where both sides of politics are finding political expediency in drip feeding weapons to Ukraine for the appearance of it, not for victory.
Mary Kissel, I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,